Welcome to Healthy Brain, Happy Body, a podcast from the Northeast Region Biofeedback Society. I'm Dr. Saul Rosenthal, a health psychologist in the Boston area, and your host as we investigate the incredible connections between brain and body. Today, we continue our conversation with Danielle Pinels, performer, vocal coach, and social worker.
Are there ways in which the One Voice method informs your clinical work?
In some ways, I think it's in more of the subtleties, where One Voice really asks singers to be attuned to both the physiology of what's happening in their voice and body. I think so much of therapy is an awareness of also what's happening in your body versus what's happening in your body when you're singing. There's what's happening in your body when you're feeling. And I think it's in the subtleties of that, like awareness is always that kind of like first step to maybe like figuring out a problem or like learning more about yourself emotionally. And that's where I think some of the bridge tends to be.
Mm-hmm. And what about the other way around? So are there ways in which what you know about EMDR or IFS show up in your students, your vocal students?
I would say more so for IFS is where I tend to see things, but I'm not at, if someone is coming to me and knows about IFS, and I do something called like mental health informed voice lessons. So someone might come to me and say like, oh, I love IFS and I want to do voice lessons. Then it's more explicit. I think often what I'm implicitly doing with voice students is if I work with a student who's feeling very nervous about not being able to sing high notes, for example, I immediately perceive that as a part of themselves that feels that anxiety. And I almost think of their true capital S conscious self as the self that we are going to be able to get to sing those high notes because they can in my mind. Yeah.
And that's that sort of the goal of IFS is to get to that self, to understand how the parts are protecting the self, perhaps in ways that are not adaptable, but that's another story.
Yes.
You do, I just want to take a moment about, you mentioned you do some mental health vocal lessons. Could you talk a little bit more about that, how you're integrating those two things more explicitly?
Yes. So I think just at the core of voice lessons, like I said, if somebody's coming to me for something very technical, we pretty much stay in technique. But oftentimes, even if someone is explicitly saying like, I want these mental health informed lessons or not, I can't help but bring active listening and reflection, and I'm pretty strengths-based. So bringing in kind of okay, this is what went really well, and then talking about like what the challenges were. So just making sure that the environment is like really growth oriented. I find that's like, what are we doing if we're not doing that? Because I definitely had, you know, I had teachers when I was growing up who were not so much that way, and right. I didn't find it helpful. So yeah.
Well, just the ways that anxiety or trauma express themselves physically in the body, I can imagine really that vocal lessons and voice singing would allow an entree to that that you might not otherwise be able to get at.
Yes. So
are there any experiences you've had where that's happened, where you've seen that, you know, where someone has clearly, you know, as they're singing or as you're teaching them a voice, there's just something there that gets maybe not resolved exactly, but unburdened or opened up?
Yeah, I have seen that, and it's really beautiful. I think it shows up differently in kids and adults. In kids, like they'll bring in a song and they won't necessarily say anything, but like suddenly in the middle of the song, like there might be tears, something's changing emotionally. And when they stop, like we stop to process. And, you know, I've seen preteens who are like for the first time, like having like dating and romance, and like, they're like, oh, like I just had my first breakup. And it's so sweet. It's like being able to finally like find like voice and language for what they were feeling through that song. And then with adults, I mean, it's also really beautiful. It can be this really conscious experience where I'm remembering in particular a student who sang a song that they used to sing, or she used to sing in her a cappella group, but she had gone through like a traumatic experience where like that song became very, very triggering. And her being able to sing that in, I think, a safe space, a validating space, and just watching kind of the unburdening happen through her singing that and feeling her way through it was, yeah, unbelievably beautiful.
Well, sort of on, I guess, in that same vein, the anxieties that we can get at through singing, I mean, it sort of does remind me of some of the things that EMDR does, which allows you to kind of sneak your, I mean, maybe not quite right, but sneak your way into that trauma in a supportive, safe way that allows people to process it. So I do wonder if singing somehow has a similar approach, and we could, you know, if we want to be really nerdy, we could talk about the physiology of it or the potential physiology, because I don't think people know. But the anxiety around singing is pretty common. So yeah. Performance anxiety. And how do you see that from your kind of therapist lens? How do you see performance anxiety?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely see it a lot, like especially first and second lessons. People are feeling scared, and I try to normalize the heck out of it. I think, I mean, one thing also is that like there's a bit of when we're performing in front of people, there's a bit of a survival instinct that kicks in. Mm-hmm. Like, don't do this, like the audience, like they're all bears and they're gonna eat you type of feeling. And so trying to normalize, like your body's having a very normal survival response to us, you know, you singing to me, and that's okay. And we're gonna honor kind of the feelings of that and welcome that into the space. And if at any point you wanna pause and not sing, let's just do that. Let's take it as slow and at your own pace as possible. And I find that like really giving the autonomy to the person in front of me really allows them to feel more in control and like they can have a safe space to try new things and sing in.
Do you have any, I don't know, tricks or techniques or how do you help people tolerate that? How do you help them be vulnerable when they're being attacked by bears? And for long enough that they realize they're actually not being attacked by bears. How do you help people do that?
Yeah, this is where the exposure of it comes in a little bit. So in our kind of like a little bit of a microcosm of a voice lesson, like it's me. And so like I'm the bear. And so if there's any insecurities or concerns that are coming to this person of what might happen if they were to sing in front of me, I want to acknowledge those first, because later on, if they're singing into a microphone in front of an audience, those concerns are going to come back up, and they'll have had a little bit of an exposure through singing just to one person to be able to go kind of to that next level of exposure, which is often what we're doing in EMDR as well, really exposing right. people to those like traumatic memories and helping them in their mind do kind of exposure in their mind so they can later on do an in vivo
exposure. Right, the imaginal exposure.
Yes, yeah. Thank you for that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I guess even IFS, you're sort of trying to figure out what the parts are doing in order to protect you from those bears.
Yes.
And exactly. Whether they're, you know, the firefighters or the managers or whatever they are. So there's just so many ways in which singing can serve a purpose for an individual, separate from the audience, I guess. Do you see differences between, say, performance and expression?
Can you say a little bit more about that?
Well, I guess because I'm thinking about like somebody who's singing, who's just taking the voice lessons because they want to get better technically rather than the sort of mental health side. Although it sounds like there's even those who want to go in technical, there's always anxiety. There's always some issue like that. But performance, I guess what I mean is when you're performing for you or for an audience, is that any different than I'm using my voice to express some, and you know, to try to open up that anxiety, to try to expose myself to that bear? I mean, obviously there's a lot of overlap. I'm kind of curious about whether you see any differences there.
Oh, it's such a good question, because I think this isn't something that a lot of people are aware of, where what's happening when you are having kind of either a one-to-one or like a private space to self-express, you're doing something like very like internal self-exploration, being able to have that private space to do that on your own, like there's a safety to that. And also I've seen you can see some of the most like quiet, timid, anxious people, and like suddenly they have a microphone in front of them and like their colors are just like bright and their personality shines through, and you're like, oh my gosh, like this is healing for you. Like this is really cathartic for you to be seen and heard by an audience, like through this art form. There's very different ways I think those things are healing. Both in their own ways, like very important.
And when you're working with people and they go in different paces and have different experiences, one of the things I also wonder about is what role does the performer's self, their identity, and actually yours as well, the identity play in this process, whether it's gender or culture or the professional role? Do you see identity as having an impact?
Yeah, absolutely. The person's kind of like identity, like cultural background, like on their expression or performance.
Yeah, yeah. On how they look, you know, how they experience the lessons or the singing.
Yeah. I mean, there can be, if people are coming from different cultural backgrounds where maybe creativity was seen as like not important, or being able to have themselves truly expressed or validated. Like maybe they came from maybe a more invalidating a culture that was more invalidating of feelings, that could have that kind of impact, where like not only is it an internal block like or barrier, like a part that keeps them from that, but it's also like something that's been so ingrained since probably the time they were born, to not prioritize this kind of a thing, or to not care about it, or like see that this is really an important part of them. And so always, like, I always want to keep that in mind too, that there can be those different like barriers going on that are strongly influencing people, or creating blocks for people.
Well, we started out by talking about all the hats you wear, and I guess now I'm thinking about them more as parts. Let me ask the integrated question. So if you had to sort of summarize your philosophy in a sentence, what would it be?
Ooh, for all of voice lessons and therapy and all of those things,
or maybe just for voice. I'll let you a little bit off the hook, but maybe just for voice. What is your philosophy?
Sure, for voice, I really want people to be able to just be able to have their most authentic self-expression when it comes to singing. And I want them to be able to meet their goals, like whatever those goals are. I want to meet them and be able to reach those milestones with them.
Hmm. Is there anything you wish therapists knew more about either voice or creativity?
I think a lot of therapists tend to be, at least the therapists I know, like tend to be so creative. But I think there's really like ways that like maybe go beneath the surface that when you bring in creativity into a session, perhaps, it can really change a person's perspective on what's going on. So even like a very light version of that might be like a role play of like asking a person, like, if you had been your mom in that situation, what would you have done? There's a bit of a drama therapy role-playing exercise there. And to give just a little bit of perspective change and helping people kind of open their minds to different ways of thinking. That's, I think, powerful.
Hmm. What might you say to somebody out there who is listening and is just anxious about using their voice, about singing, about expressing themselves? What would you say to help kind of draw them in?
I think I'd say, first of all, that makes a lot of sense. I think there's such a thing in our culture about being good or being, you know, perfect when it comes to something. And I always think of singing as its own skill, like any other skill that you've ever learned. Like, you can't be like a like pro guitarist the first time you like ever lay your fingers on a guitar. And singing is exactly the same way. And if you're open to, I think the big thing is if you want to do it, having patience and openness and being kind to yourself as you're going at your own pace with it is the most important thing to getting to do it.
Well, and it certainly sounds from what you've said and you know, other things that I've seen or heard before, there are certainly people who are born with the talent, you know, with the gift, but it's like you're saying, it's a skill, it's a talent. You could probably take anybody and make them a better singer, maybe not a professional singer, but a better singer. Yeah. It's something that we could all do better at. You've done a lot of things. You sort of started as a theater kid and then into sort of psychotherapy and different approaches. How has your relationship with your own voice changed over time?
Like I was saying before, I mean, the voice is so precious, I think, to so many people, and I am no different from that. Being, I think, a singer all through childhood into college, where I was singing at a professional level, and I was doing warm-ups and prep exercises every single day. And that singing was really ingrained into my identity. There's like a part of me that is my singer part. Even when I moved into mental health counseling, like doing graduate school, becoming a therapist, that singer part got a lot less airtime. And I was warming up way less. I was prepping way less. Like, I still to this day, like I'm a therapist a lot of the time, so I just can't be singing most of the time. And there was a real big ego. I feel like there's a better word for this, like ego bruise or ego something, where I was knowing that my voice wasn't where it used to be, and I was crushed. I was like, oh, I'm a bad singer, like I always sing sharp. It's really like it's something I like still like need to tend to that part with, where knowing that like that part of me really, really like loves singing and wants to be acknowledged. And there's a lot of kind of inner healing work I've had to do, I think, since that kind of moment of reckoning.
Well, Danielle, it's been great talking with you. If people are interested, where can they find out more about you and your work?
Definitely. It's been so great talking to you too. These are such thoughtful questions. And I am in a couple places. So for my voice lessons, breakitdownvocals.com is a great place to find me. And I have an Instagram, breakitdownvocals is the username. Very similar over at my therapy practice. I'm doing EMDR, IFS. I do groups. They're actually very specialty groups. They're groups for people who are healing from narcissistic trauma. And that's at realtalkpractice.com. And my Instagram and TikTok are realtalkpractice as the username.
Great. And we'll put those links into the show notes. And I just have to, you know, give you to say to anybody listening out there who is thinking about voice lessons, Danielle's great. So go to her website and sign up. So again, thank you so much for joining us. It was great talking with you and catching up.
Yeah, it was so great talking to you too. I'm glad we're reconnected.
This is Healthy Brain, Happy Body. I'm your host, Dr. Saul Rosenthal. Our guide today was Danielle Pinels. Learn more about her at realtalkpractice.com and breakitdownvocals.com. Subscribe to this podcast by clicking the subscribe here link in the show notes or wherever you get your podcasts. If you enjoy Healthy Brain, Happy Body, please subscribe and leave reviews at Apple Podcasts, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. Reviews help us get to more listeners, and that's more people who can learn about and benefit from biofeedback, neurofeedback, and other mind-body approaches to health. Also, let us know what you think by sending us email. Our address is healthybrain@nrbs.org. Healthy Brain, Happy Body is produced and edited by me. The theme music is Catch It by Coma Media. It is a production of the Northeast Region Biofeedback Society. Go to nrbs.org to find out more about the organization, including our trainings, webinars, and yearly conference. All opinions expressed are those of our guests and not the NRBS. The podcast is not meant to replace advice from qualified healthcare providers. Healthy Brain, Happy Body is supported by the sponsors of NRBS and by the International Society for Neuroregulation and Research. Be sure to join us on our next episode as we continue to explore the keys to our well-being on Healthy Brain, Happy Body.